I guess, you knew Jerry McCall,
yeah,
another mathematician.
Right.
I talked to Jerry not too long ago. He's down in Mississippi still.
He's living in South Mississippi?
He is, in Gulfport, I believe.
Gulfport, okay.
But I,
in the UAH, you know, going from that extension center to forming UAH.
Mm-hmm.
He wanted a college here. I remember, some, of course, most stuff I ever knew about Von Braun was secondhand.
Mm-hmm.
Except, you know, technical.
Sure.
Stuff.
Sure.
But I never really talked to him one-on-one about anything else. And, I know he was big in his, I think his brother actually taught English down there when it was an extension center.
Magnus?
Yeah.
Did he really?
I believe he did. I think he taught something down there when it was out at Old Butler High School.
Uh-huh. I didn't know that. I knew that the younger brother, Magnus, was here for a time.
Yeah, he worked in what we call the materials lab now. He
mm-hmm.
He was evidently a chemist.
Mm-hmm.
He worked in that materials lab for a while. I never did interface any with him, but I knew he was over there. They
right.
were in the building next to us at one time.
Mm-hmm. I didn't know of his connection with UAH.
But I think he did.
Yeah.
I think he did teach something down there.
Right. And they call you Rocky. How'd you get that name?
Well, I got it in high school, unfortunately, and I never shook it.
Do you remember the first time you ever saw or met Dr. Von Braun?
Yeah, the first time I ever, well, of course, I saw him quite often because this was a very small place when I came here. We were all up on what was called Squirrel Hill, Building 111.
I remember.
On the top,
well, yeah.
top of that little hill right off of Drake Avenue, you know, where the...
Right.
Oh,
the Officers Club later moved in there.
That's correct.
My wife, as a 19-year-old, worked in PNC
right?
that same building.
Okay.
Right.
Well,
short time.
That's where I came to work when I first started here. And he was down the hall. And, of course, you know, there was a lot of talk about him. And I talked to him in the cafeteria the first time I ever talked to him in line down there.
Mm-hmm.
There was a cafeteria in the basement. Back in those days, we had to go down there for coffee. You know, you didn't have coffee at your drawing board.
Right.
And I was working on the drawing board at that particular time. And
didn't dare have coffee around that India ink or drawings.
Yeah. Right. And then, of course, when we got the Redstone project, as the thing, as it matured, we had reviews with him. And of course, he was interested in design, and he'd come by every once in a while. You'd turn around, and he'd be looking at your drawing over
mm-hmm.
the shoulder. And then when we moved down here to this area, they took two warehouses. The Army has those buildings now. It's over next to our train. Took two warehouses, put a restroom in between them, connected them.
Right.
And he and his staff were up in one, and the design branch, which I was in, headed by Ludwig Roth, his son is head of PD out here now.
Axel, yeah.
Axel's dad.
My wife went to school with, with Axel, yeah.
Okay. Well, Axel's daddy was my lab, was head of the design branch, which was really P&E lab.
Mm-hmm.
And we were in that other building, the south building. And, of course, you know, in that time, I saw him all the time, you know. We used the same restroom and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But I'd my wife was secretary in Mm-hmm. I suppose you've talked to Bonnie Holmes.
Well, I have her on my list to contact. I know Bonnie well, and I approached her about the Milton Cummings research a year or two ago when I was, you know, at that point of trying to talk with her, and she was very pleasant. She just said she really didn't have anything to add about that. You know, yes, Mr. Cummings would visit out in Dr. Von Braun's office every now and then, and Von Braun would go have dinner at the Cummings home, but she really didn't have much to add. I know she would have a lot to add.
Well, I think she would know, from what you said over the phone, what you was interested in, she would know more about the, you know, firsthand.
Right.
I heard a lot about it secondhand.
Right.
About, you know, like, I remember somebody that operated the elevator over there in 4488 was sick, and he helped in that, and I heard, you know, a lot of stories about how he helped people who were up against it. But with her, it's firsthand data.
Sure.
And with me, it's just something that I heard about.
Right.
I understand. Involved.
Well, in some cases, I can go and corroborate these with somebody
else. Well, you know, if you're interested in human interest stories, you really have to get it with somebody who worked directly with somebody, because usually you don't talk about that kind of stuff unless you go to lunch together, you know.
Sure.
There's you know, a lot of guys that I've known here and worked with. I knew very little about them, except the guys that I went to lunch with.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, I went to lunch, you know, like 4 or 5 years in a row with the same bunch of guys. You learn then, whereas if you just in contact with people in a meeting where you're really reviewing something, getting something critiqued, which was where, of course, Von Braun's special.
Mm-hmm.
He could do that better than anybody.
Is that right? Study something and critique it.
You know, if you started pitching something to him, he could find holes immediately. He had an analytical mind. He was just that way. He could find holes in it that other people couldn't see.
And you witnessed that from time to time. Any particular instance stand out?
Well, no, I don't remember any, you know, real breakthroughs. I'm just talking about, you know, the details of what you're doing. It's just amazing that a guy can penetrate.
Mm-hmm.
He could always tell when somebody was trying to snow him, which is really a unique thing, you know.
Mm-hmm.
He was real tolerant of people giving him a pitch, much more tolerant than most of the other Germans if they were screwing up or something. He didn't like people that tried to answer questions they didn't know the answer to. He preferred you tell him, "I don't know, but I'll find out."
Mm-hmm.
You could tell that aggravated him. But most of the time, he was a perfect gentleman in those situations. He never really tried to make you look bad. I never saw him really try to make anybody look bad.
In front of others, right.
Yeah, in just a few cases where people were really, you know, trying to bluff their way through something, which is a good aspect of the human side of the guy.
It sure is.
Well, he really interested in showing anybody up, like a lot of people are.
Mm-hmm. True.
You know, you see a lot of people in this business that they only ask questions that they know the answer to.
Right.
They wouldn't dare ask a question that they didn't know the answer to.
I'm sure. I know exactly what you're.
You probably run into them in your business.
I have, and I probably on occasion have done that myself as a way of showing my knowledge of something.
Yeah.
But it's not a good trade, and you're saying Von Braun
No, he didn't fool with that stuff. He's a strict business, but he had his humans.
Right. But do you recall any humorous incidents?
Well, there's one thing
that you even, right.
That a lot of the guys know, and there is a tape existing of this, and I don't know what happened to it. But on the first Saturn V, we ran the CDDT countdown demonstration test. Gosh, I don't remember how many times. And I was working in the HOSC at that time, which was our support center. It started
mm-hmm.
back in those days, it was called LEAF, Launch Information Exchange Facility, I believe was the name of it. But when the day, I think it was the fifth time we ran it, we made it all the way through. And Dr. Rudolph was down in the blockhouse at KSC, and it so happened that Von Braun was up here in the
mm-hmm.
office. So we had a hotline to Rudolph's console. So when it was all over and we were successful, Dr. Spear was sitting at the, in the action center at the head table. He was our boss. Von Braun came up and said he wanted to talk to Rudolph, so Spear just picked up the phone and handed it.
That was Dr. Spear?
Yeah, Dr. Red Spear.
Oh, yeah, I remember.
Retired from here. Fridjof, I think his name is. But, he went by the American name, Fred.
mm-hmm.
I don't know. That phone rang right on Rudolph's console, so he picked it up and he said to Rudolph, you know, Von Braun says, Arthur, of course you really have to have it with their accent to really get the significance of this thing.
Right.
It was on that tape. He said, Arthur, this is he didn't say his name, he said, Arthur, congratulations on a successful test or something like that. And Rudolph said, who is this? That's the first thing he said. And Von Braun said, this is Werner. Rudolph, no pause, anything. He said, Werner who? Of course, you know, everybody out here knew Von Braun has such a distinctive voice.
Yes.
Everybody out here knew his voice. There's no way you could find anybody out here that had ever been around him at all that didn't know his voice. And he came back, Werner Von Braun, you blankety blank, the guy that runs all over the country getting money so you can play, sit down and play your funny game. There was a long pause. I mean, he let him have it.
Right.
He let him have it because he didn't recognize his voice. And I don't remember the exact words, but he did say, you know, the guy runs around all over the country getting money so you can play your stupid games or funny games or something like that. But anyway, there was a pause. And Rudolph says, oh, Werner. That tape was around here, and we played it at Rudolph's retirement, and it sort of made him mad. Some of the guys got it together and played it at his retirement. It just about hacked him off.
Is that right?
That was really about the funniest thing I had lunch with him. Well, not me, but there were about, you know, after Shepard went up in that, the Jupiter C booster, Mercury Red.
Right.
It was a Jupiter C booster that we had done. I was at the gig for that, and after it went, we had been out there since before daylight, and we went back to, I think it was Coco Motel or something like that, I think, on think I've over and eat with the guys. You know? So he came over and sat down at our table. Of course, one of the guys at our table was Bob Lindstrom, who was back in Huntsville now.
Right.
And he knew him, you know, much. But he was a higher guy than the rest of us. And he, you know, he was one of the project managers. So he came over there, and it was interesting that day, you know, having lunch with him, although, you know, there wasn't any profound statements or
anything. But, I'll bet that was.
But he was, you know, he was thanking everybody for all their hard work and all that stuff. But it was an enjoyable time. Now, Bob's another one you might want to talk to. He, of course, he worked real close with the guy on several projects.
I know Bob, and I saw him fairly recently. It may have been at one of the funerals of the German team members, Heimberg or...
Well, Heimberg is still living, I think, isn't he?
I'll have to double check, but no, I think I'm having a little absent-mindedness here. I believe it was, I've been to several of the Germans' funerals lately. And I think that one was at Heimberg. I believe Carl passed away now.
Well, maybe I missed it. I always, at all these things, I always enjoy talking to him.
I went to the Eberhard Ries Memorial Service that they had. Maybe that was where I saw him. That was the last one.
I was thinking Carl was still living.
Well, I hope so.
I think that's a book that needs to be written. Is on all those Germans.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, who were all those guys that came over here? You know, I knew a lot of them, but I can't remember all of them.
Mm-hmm.
And I have never seen that. And I got a hold of a paperback. Similar to the one you had there. It's a paperback about Pullamanda.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, and it mentioned but not very many of the ones that wound up here were mentioned in that book.
Mm-hmm.
And I've always thought that before all those guys move on, it would really be good if somebody wrote a book about those 100 and something, whatever it was, that originally came over here.
You're right, and I don't know if that'll be done now that so many of them are gone. Walt Weisman is having a rough time with
yeah.
I had thought he had Parkinson's, and somebody told me he also was in the early stages of Alzheimer's. But it's pretty early. And I'm really not sure now whether he does have Parkinson's or not. Anyway, you're right. That would be interesting. Of course, it all focused on Von Braun as the leader,
well,
and then somewhat on.
There's a reason for that,
right?
For sure, because you know, he looked after those guys, and he felt responsible. Of course, he never told me or anybody else that I know of. I think he felt responsible, you know, for bringing those guys to a strange country because he was, you know, he was obviously interested in. If you read all the stuff about, you know, what happened in Germany with Colonel Hamel and all, he was obviously interested in keeping those guys together and getting them into the U.S. hands.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think he figured that, well, of course, you know, the Germans hated the Russians anyway back in those days. And I guess he figured, you know, the United States was a much more likely country that would invest money into going into space than Russians would be, plus the fact that they didn't like Russians anyway.
Right.
And so it was obvious he made a concerted effort to get those guys channeled into the U.S.
Right, and they say, you know, the British might have been a possibility, but then they rained all those V2s on
England. They wouldn't have been very popular.
So they wouldn't have been very popular there. So almost by the process of elimination, and I guess there were a lot of positives about the U.S.
Yeah, because, you know, if you looked at history of the country, which I'm sure he had, we were much more likely to do something like that than the British were.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Because they were extremely conservative
people,
and they probably wouldn't have been interested in putting very much money into that.
Mm-hmm.
So,
true.
But that was just something that's always sort of bothered me. It always bothered me that that those guys went out of NASA without any fanfare.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, because, you know, they were, like everybody else, they had certain weaknesses, but which all humans do, but they contributed a lot of sweat and hard work to everything that, you know, we had accomplished. And it seems like they just went out without any.
I think there are about 16 or 17 or 18 still in Huntsville. All in retirement, I guess, although I understand there may be one still out at Marshall.
Well, but he's not an original.
Oh, okay.
He came over in 47.
All right.
He works upstairs here.
Who is that?
Werner Dahm, D-A-H-M-N, D-A-H-N, I guess it is.
Werner with an H or not? What's our?
W-E-R.
Some of them.
His phone number.
All right.
I've worked with him over the years. I see him every once in a while. He eats lunch in his cafeteria. You know, there were several of those guys, like,
But had he been at Peenemunde?
I think so. Probably as a soldier. I'm not sure.
Okay.
I don't know him that well, but, like, Dr. Spear was a soldier there at Peenemunde, a real young guy.
Mm-hmm.
And Bob Brown brought him over. I think he was a student of Oberg, whatever his name was.
Right.
That, Von Brown brought him Spear over in 1955. I met him just a day or two after he got here, and then in 1960 I went to work for him. He was a very smart guy.
That was about 55, you said?
Yeah, when Dr. Spear came over. I believe Dom came in 47. That's back before they came to Huntsville.
Okay.
His number is 544-1559.
All right, great. And he's in this building, too.
Yes. So he would, he's an aerodynamist. I'm not sure all, you know, how much he knows about VB, as we call him, from anything besides technical thing, but I know he was one of the ace technical guys in the air ballistics area.
So y'all call Dr. Von Braun VB?
A lot of people called him VB.
VB?
VB.
You're right,
yeah.
VB.
Von
Braun.
Yeah.
Good. In all my note-taking, I write
it. Of course, not to his face.
Right. Were there anything else he was called not to his face or?
No, I've never heard anybody you know, you would expect to be in a German and we'd have been at war with Germans. I've never heard any of that out here.
Mm-hmm.
I've heard some people say, you know, that certain people in town, you know, they'd run into.
Mm-hmm.
But I never heard of anybody out here. You know. I guess it was pretty hard on somebody who fought in that theater to I know it would have been me with the Japanese, but, you know, because I was in sick
right.
my war time.
Mm-hmm. But you didn't hear, much of that.
I never heard anything out here.
And, but I guess I mean, generally, the employees, I mean, even way back then, were pretty respectful of him or either just kind of neutral about it.
No, they were respectful. You know. Of course, I guess, he was so, it was obvious that he was so much above the other.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's pretty.
And you know, going back to what you said about that team, one of the most remarkable aspects of this is that that team stayed together for so long. I mean, you know, good number of them, and that probably was due to what his leadership ability or charm or
and the fact that they thought that. That he leveled with them, they were really going places, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Now, of course, a few of them left all along.
Sure. For better pay and run their own show or whatever.
Get to a different town or area.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some of them left for that reason. They wanted to live in a more metropolitan area.
Sure.
Hospital was only 16,000 when they first came here.
Mm-hmm.
And there were some that, that left, well, Axel's father left rather early.
Mm-hmm.
He left in the mid-50s or so.
Is that right? Yeah.
And
then some of them chose not to come here from Bliss.
That's correct.
Right, a few.
A few did. And then, you know, I know the fellow who took Ludwig Ross' place in our organization, Dr. Rydell, he left right away and took a job with GE in Philadelphia.
Mm-hmm.
He left way before we went to NASA.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a real brilliant seeming to me mathematician that worked up there. He was higher up in the organization than Dom was in air ballistics. So that I had problems with some equations one time, and I was told by one of the Germans to go up and talk to him. He seemed like a brilliant fellow. He left, Dr. Fredrickson or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Fredericks, may have been Fredericks. That's the reason I was mentioning, you know, that a lot of those guys that I can remember that I just had maybe a one-time thing with, and then, you know, after they were gone, then I couldn't remember exactly who all they were. But I believe this guy's name was Frederick, Dr. Frederick.
I will be interviewing Dr. Stuhlinger, and he was helpful to me on my Cummings research because he had some dealings with him in connection with the Astronomical Observatory that Cummings was heavily involved in as a financial and moral supporter, he also knew that was a good way to von Braun's heart. But and then Stuhlinger and his wife were guests at the Cummings home from time to time. But I don't want to interview Ernst, which he begs me to call him now, and I didn't for all these other years, but I guess I'm approaching his age. I don't want to do that without reading his biography of von Braun, which I'm now, that he and Fred Ordway did, so I'm doing that. But and next week I'm going to talk to Connie Dannenberg, but I need to write down about and make sure that Carl Heimberg passed away. I'm 99% certain that he did.
I'm getting old and forgetful myself, and I may have missed it when he did pass away. It seems like you're probably right. I ran into Bob Lindstrom, and it may be that's what he told me, that he had seen somebody at Heimberg's funeral.
I think that's the case, yeah.
Come in.
you can think of. And, you know, you've given me some useful tidbits of information here, and I'll probably... I had not heard that about the call between Von Braun and Rudolph.
That was one of the funniest things I guess I ever saw here. In the, you really have to have the tape and all the accents to get
the full impact. And in fact, I know all these old...
I wasn't in that room, but I was the support coordinator, and I was in a, across in a room, and the way we had that design, the way Spear had it designed, he could see everybody. And I was the guy who coordinated the problems we were working.
Right.
And he could turn this way and see me through this glass. And so happened that Von Braun was standing at the table, and he was standing up talking, and I could see his face from where I was, even though I was looking through two plates of glass, because
mm-hmm.
there were a hallway as well as, you know, there was a hallway here with glass on both sides, and I was in the room over there. And that really made him mad. He turned red.
Is that right?
Yeah. Of course, everybody in an operational position, if they had that button punch, could hear that conversation.
Which Saturn was that?
That was the CDT for the first Saturn V, 501, SA-501 countdown demonstration test.
That was Saturn 1, and that was the Saturn 1, right?
Right.
501?
No, Saturn 5.
Saturn 5, all right.
Saturn 5. That's the one that, the big one.
Oh, yeah, I know. The moon.
Apollo moon rocket.
And that was a CDT countdown demonstration.
CDT, countdown demonstration test.
Just very, very quickly, was there any, are there any peculiarities or idiosyncrasies of Dr. Von Braun that you remember that might even might be worth exploring or looking into?
He was a very witty guy. Not to me, but from talking to my wife and Bonnie.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Bonnie worked with him for years and years. She worked with him. She came to work. She was the secretary over in the post engineer's office. And Von Braun's secretary quit. She came with him when he was in that little building on the other end of us where they connected two warehouses.
Right.
And my wife worked in Medeiros' office, and then she went up there. But when our daughter was born, she quit. So she was only up there with him.
Right.
She didn't like particularly working in Medeiros' office. She went up there. But Bonnie, of course, worked with him all those years.
Bonnie could... She knows everything.
Yeah.
If she's such a private person and she's very discreet, I don't know of any reporter that she's or writer that she's ever talked to in any depth at all, other than to say, "Oh, Dr. Von Braun was a wonderful man. It was wonderful to work for him."
Yeah.
But as far as, and I don't mean talking out of school. I just mean sharing some of the things that happened.
Well, she probably. She probably feels like, you know, she didn't, you know, technically know all of the things, and it may be that if you approach her with a human interest,
right,
the human side of the guy, she might be a little bit more open.
Right,
with.
And that's exactly what I'm going to do.